Are you ready for a new direction? Are you ready to bring back Illinois?
From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The voters have spoken. The voters have asked for divided government. For the first time in many years, we'll have a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature. We have to accomplish two overarching goals. We need Illinois to be competitive, and we need Illinois to stay compassionate. We can't do one without the other. They are both critically important. We can judge our state, we can judge our nation by how well we care for our most vulnerable citizens. That is a good way to judge the quality of our life and our families.
When we closed last night, many votes hadn't been counted. And many people, as you know, waited hours to vote. But now the votes have been counted. It's clear that we do not have enough votes to win the election, and therefore we respect the result. But one issue that I was very pleased to see yesterday, voted on by the people, loud and clear, was raising the minimum wage in our state. And I really look forward to working with the legislature in the time I have left as governor to get that job done.
Those are the comments of Bruce Rauner, victorious in his campaign for governor, and Pat Quinn, who gave a concession speech the day following the election. Rauner wins by about a 5 percentage point spread. We'll be talking about the campaign, the future, the implications, and anything else that comes along related to the election of this past week. On State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS, and our guests today are Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues. Jamie, thanks for stopping by.
Glad to be here.
And Tony Arnold of WBEZ Chicago Public Radio. Tony, glad to have you along as well.
No, thanks for having me.
And I will throw it to Amanda Venicky. We had the victory of Bruce Rauner, Pat Quinn. What do you want to focus on out of the gate there? Any special notes?
Well, yeah, I think that the takeaway from this is how very dissatisfied people were with Governor Pat Quinn and his leadership or lack thereof. We'd seen the polls saying that it was going to be neck and neck, and yeah, it was, I mean, not a runner didn't run away with it per se. It was close, but in a Democratic state, and I think the other races show that that's very much what Illinois remains, you saw great dissatisfaction at the top, and also voters buying into the promise of prosperity that Rauner had made, maybe hoping that Illinois' fortunes would go like Rauner's, of course, fortunes that the private equity investor was able to use to help him win that race. So another key takeaway would be all of the great amounts of money that went into the governor's race to make it a record approximately $100 million campaign, and really also judicial, legislative, other races. So money is the other takeaway, and I'm not going to say that it can buy you elections per se, but it can at the very least buy you voters' love.
It won't buy you just a overwhelming majority, though, apparently. I mean, when the winner has 50% of the vote, obviously money was a factor, I think, in this election. But I think it shows that money alone isn't going to do it. I mean, a lot of money with a candidate for governor, an incumbent, that probably had lower popularity ratings than many governors. Charlie Wheeler.
Well, at one point, national survey showed, I forget who it was, but somebody ranked Quinn as the least popular governor among all the 50 states. And I think the fact that Rauner put, 26, 27 million of his own money into his campaign, he also donated a lot of money to statewide Republican statewide to various Republican organizations. And I think one of the things that was very helpful for him was the ability to identify and get to the polls likely Republican voters. That's something that in the past the Republican Party has not been very good at. And to his credit, Governor-elect Rauner wanted to invest in building up the party infrastructure.
Something that because Republicans haven't had wins in so long, both at the top and more so even with the legislature, they haven't been able to do. I do think the money comes into a factor as well, just with Rauner being able to perhaps, you know, win over allies because of the infusions of cash that he was putting elsewhere to set the agenda. And one of the other ways that he was able to claim both the nomination originally, but also the race in the end, was because of how he was able to define himself. You saw him walk a very careful line in order to get the Republican nomination and to kind of not tick off any of those really conservative voters. He didn't talk a lot about same-sex marriage and, you know, even talked about how he would have vetoed it because he wanted a referendum on it. He steered away as much as possible from talking about other social issues, and so not awakening any sort of hornet's nest there. And then you saw him change course for the general election. He still didn't want to talk about social issues, but he was very, very disciplined in not answering a lot of questions. He stopped constantly haranguing on quote-unquote big union bosses. And so he kind of changed tune to appeal to a broader electorate. And it was his money that was able to define him. When you can have paid media versus earned media, you don't have to answer all of those reporters' nasty questions talking to you and trying to get details about the budget and about all of those plans. And so that, I think, very much helped Rauner. So two lessons there in terms of, again, the money.
And
but
Tony
also,
Arnold, also, I want to, mm-hmm. Tony Arnold, we just mentioned how the Republican Party at the grassroots level was kind of reinvigorated because they were receiving a lot of cash influx from the candidate for governor. In Chicago, Quinn did not get what he needed out of Chicago. While he still won by an overwhelming majority, he was still missing something in Chicago.
Yeah, when you looked at sort of the breakdown of the votes, you get to see sort of where the turnout was and wasn't for Quinn, and in a lot of these wards in Chicago, he got sort of, you know, on the South Side in particular, a lot of the South Side wards, which are predominantly African American wards, those are actually turned out pretty well for him. He would win those wards with more than 90%, in some instances even higher vote totals than in 2010. But in other parts of the city, on the north side, for instance, and in suburban Cook County especially, the totals were just down by and large, and it was from 4 years ago. And that's where Quinn needed, if he had sort of those totals from 4 years ago, I think we'd be looking at a different result. But with the overall turnout down, especially up here in Cook County, it just wasn't enough. And the fact that Bruce Rauner was able to win with almost a third percent of Cook County is kind of incredible. I think that right there is a good indication of how Rauner won.
Because he ran as a moderate.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
But let me ask you a question, Tony. I'm not clear in my mind. Was it because Democrats didn't show up, or was it because the total electorate was about the same, but Rauner did better in that same general number of voters than Bill Brady had done 4 years before?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination, but also that probably in all likelihood Democrats weren't showing up for some of the reasons you were talking about before, with the unpopularity and really just some overall anger over what he did to sign the bill on pensions. Not to single out that one issue, but that I think was still a driving factor with some of the base that Democrats like to lean on in tight elections like this one. And when you add that with how Bruce Rauner ran his campaign as you know, this person with a very carefully crafted message, and add to that the discipline that he had, which was kind of an astounding. One of my surprises of this whole campaign has been that Bruce Rauner ran as a first-time candidate and was pretty much as disciplined and stuck to his message as closely as he did throughout for the past year and a half. Now, the message changed a little bit as the campaign went on. It was a different message from the primary than it was in the general, but the fact of the matter is that once he got his his message, he stuck to it, which is kind of rare for, I think, in most first-time candidates.
And let's be clear, also hilarious. I use that phrase because Rauner has said, my message is clear, when in fact, oftentimes it was anything but. Right. We still are hearing from him. My take on the minimum wage is clear, even though we have video from him going back that says, no, eliminate it. No, I think we need to lower it. And then, okay, let's raise it. He says that he did, in fact, vote for that non-binding referendum to hike the Illinois minimum wage. He just doesn't want legislators to do that during the lame duck session. He wants big decisions to wait until he takes over. But I would say that a lot of things are anything but clear. And it's kind of humorous to hear Rauner say that. And yet it gets worked into stories because it's peppered throughout so many of his comments.
Yeah.
But that makes sense, though. If you have an electorate that's very dissatisfied with the incumbent, you get out there with a message that really doesn't say anything. There are no specifics. And people who are dissatisfied will read into what you're saying. Oh, yeah, he's going to take care of it. He says, we're going to freeze property taxes. Well, what the deuce does that mean? But if you're somebody who's just paid your second installment of your property tax and you're very unhappy about it, oh, yeah, he's my guy. He's going to freeze my property taxes. And Quinn hasn't done anything about him.
And the
so
other thing I'd add.
It enables you to offer some hope without actually having to offer any real ideas.
The other thing I'd add to that, too, real quick, is just that when you look at the results, too, it's that voters obviously voted for change at the top of the ticket, this race that got a lot of the attention and a lot of the money, and they didn't really vote for change everywhere else. It was the same U.S. Senator in Dick Durbin, the same comptroller in Judy Barr, same attorney general in Lisa Madigan, same secretary of state in Jesse White. The parties,
same
for
incumbents
the most part,
throughout
for
all the legislature except for one,
is all the same. And so, except for one race in the state senate. So by and large, it was only this one particular race that voters went for something different.
Jamie Dunn, I'm going to let you get in there too.
I mean, on the flip side, on messaging, you know, Quinn kind of had two options to get folks out to the polls: either offer them policy that they were excited about, which, I mean, to be fair, he did stand behind a budget plan where it may not have been an unpopular one. He did have one, or make people scared enough of Rauner, Democrats scared enough of Rauner to come out. And you know, he clearly kind of opted for the latter, and it didn't work as it did in 2010.
This is State Week. Coming up, we'll look at some of the implications.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's features include the plight of young African American males. Also, is Illinois facing a possible casino overload? Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
The panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Illinois Issues' Jamie Dunn, and Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. And we heard at the beginning, we heard that Pat Quinn said, well, in the advisory questions on the ballot, people overwhelmingly supported a minimum wage increase, and he was going to work for that minimum wage increase in his remaining time in office, which ends the second week in January. Meantime, Bruce Rauner is saying he hopes they hold off on the minimum wage, saying he supports a minimum wage increase, but there need to be changes in workers' compensation and other business issues. So will a Democratic legislature let Governor Pat Quinn get a final victory and support a minimum wage increase before he leaves office, Amanda?
I don't know. You hear from the sponsor who's really been backing the minimum wage increase, Senator Kim Lightford, who I believe Tony actually recently talked to, and she says it's going to happen. Yet I also wouldn't be surprised if it didn't, just in terms of there isn't a whole lot of love lost between Democrats and Pat Quinn. Yes, you had Democrats working for him, but I think many would argue, for example, the Speaker wasn't out in front doing all that he could to get Pat Quinn reelected. So, in a way, it would take the issue off the table and allow Democrats to not only give Quinn that win, but to get something on there that they care about before Rauner takes over. So in that sense, yes, I think that there is very much a possibility, but it also would leave out some room for negotiation. And they're going to, I think, spend the veto session slash lame duck, probably getting some other issues out of the way. Not maybe a cascade. I don't expect there to be a win, a, hey, Rauner, we're going to give you a big fat tax increase before you take over. You're welcome. Here's a budget gift that'll make things easier on you. No, but they'll focus a lot on labor issues, trying to nip any of those in the bud for their allies before you get who is perceived to be an anti-union, anti-labor governor taking over.
Were I an advisor to the Democrats, I would suggest that they owe it to all of those folks who came out to vote mm-hmm. for the minimum wage, to the roughly two-thirds of Illinoisans who supported it, that they should just go ahead and do it. Do it the first week in January, let Governor Quinn sign it as kind of his last hurrah, and be done with it. Instead of giving that option to Bruce Rauner to sign it and be a hero to all those folks. And for a lawmaker who's maybe skittish about it, the argument would be, well, I know that there's some objection, but on the other hand, there were 62% of the people in my district voted in favor of it, and I have to respect the wishes of my constituents. So it's kind of a no-brainer in my judgment.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, I was kind of curious what you made of the comments. We heard compassion come up quite a bit in Bruce Rauner's speech. It took me back to 1988 and the George Bush victory of the presidential election and the term that was thrown around at the time because of his wealth, the noblesse oblige or something of that. Is that what we're getting again with Bruce Rauner?
I was kind of, in one sense, I was kind of surprised because I would venture to say that if you went back and looked at every word that has been uttered since he's been running, compassion would not be among the top ones. But in a sense, the guy's a chameleon. He was, you know, hard on unions, a right-wing guy when he ran in the primary. He became a moderate in the general election. His wife comes out and says, oh, yeah, he supported Planned Parenthood. And so now he's going to be compassionate. In a way, he has a luxury in that he comes into office and he really hasn't laid out any concrete agenda, so he can pretty much do whatever he wants. And I suppose his advisors say now's the time to be compassionate.
Do you think that was a good sign from a Republican governor on election night to say that? Do you think it signaled anything?
Well, I look at the Republican governors that we've had, and they've all been compassionate. We've not had a hard right guy like a Scott Walker or a Sam Brown back in Kansas. If you look at Jim Thompson, you look at Jim Egger, you look at George Ryan, they were all pragmatic moderates. George Ryan was the guy who declared amnesty on the death penalty, for example. Jim Egger helped create programs to encourage people to go on the welfare rolls to be hired. Jim Thompson stood up for a lot of those issues. Thompson asked for tax increases, for money for schools and for social programs. So the history of all the years I've watched has been Republican governors in Illinois are cast from that mold as opposed to being some ideologue.
I think that word comes also because Rauner has basically campaigned on cuts to services, government services. If less revenue is coming in from the income tax and he wants to cut it, then that potentially means budget cuts are coming. Now, he might try to say, well, I'm cutting inefficiencies. But the other side of that is going to be, is that where are those inefficiencies? Those are probably going to be in either it's going to be education or prisons or child welfare. Care for the aging population.
It's got to come from somewhere.
It's got to come from somewhere. And so I think what's going on here is you're seeing this word compassion come from out of nowhere all of a sudden because in all likelihood budget cuts are coming.
Well, he probably, Jamie Dimon, he won't be given the tax increases, Amanda Vinicky said. They won't be doing anything like that for him in advance. And that sets up, really, we have to remember, the Democrats retained supermajorities in the House and Senate, alluded to earlier in the show. And Jamie, what do you think that sets up with the House Speaker Michael Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, and Governor Bruce Rauner?
Yeah, well, and the heat is on the budget. I mean, the as we've talked about on the show tons of times, the budget that was approved in the spring does not fully fund state services at the level that they're at right now through the rest of the fiscal year. And there's been really no planning for, that drop in funding that's going to be coming. The agencies have been spending as though something was going to be figured out. So now the pressure is on to solve the budget crisis that is really looming for this current fiscal year and then next fiscal year. We're not in great shape either because of the borrowing that was done to build this fiscal year's budget. So they're going to have to start, you know, trying to work together as quickly as possible. I don't know that that's going to happen, but there is a looming crisis, that's going to be knocking at the door as soon as Governor Rauner gets into the governor's mansion.
See, and I think the crisis won't really hit until the next fiscal year. I think they can get through this fiscal year with what they've got out there. And part of it will be just delaying bills, which is kind of the historic way we've done it. The really, when the rubber hits the road, is for 2016, when there's, depending on whose figures you look at, we're facing a $6 to $8 billion hole that will need to be plugged. And it's going to require cuts. It's also going to require tax increases. And it's going to require then Governor Rauner, to wear the collar for the tax increases. And a lot of these Republican lawmakers who for 12 years have been sitting back saying, you know, casting stones at the Democrats, so to speak, you guys are in charge, you solve it. Well, now suddenly, as Rauner said in the opening clip, we have a divided government, and now both parties have to work. And some of these Republican naysayers in the House and Senate suddenly are going to find themselves pushing the green light on stuff that they really would prefer not to.
Amanda Vinicky, as a State House reporter, I'm sure it's hard not to be excited for the political side of things that are yet to come. We did have one emerge this week in his speech that night, Rauner's accepted speech, he made it sound like he had reached out to Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton, made it seem during that speech the implication was he had talked to them. We later find out he had not, might have talked to a voicemail, and a staffer talked to a staffer on one side. Is that a poor beginning of things?
You know, I see it from two sides. Yes. First of all, you have Rauner, who has been perceived as a chameleon, we'll use Charlie's phrase, to be kind on issues. And another indication of that, a guy who needs to build trust, I think, both with the public and with politicians that have long been around Springfield. And instead, you have that right off the bat. But also, it's a big sign from the other side of things. You know, you have President Barack Obama calling to congratulate and wish Governor Rauner well, and yet you aren't getting that from either of the Democratic leaders of the General Assembly, it appears, nor from outgoing Governor Quinn, who, at least as of last check, had not made any sort of contact with Rauner. So it is, I think, Democrats showing their claws. It is going to be very difficult for Rauner to work with them. They're not going to make it easy. But also, yeah, Rauner, you really have to watch what you say, and you kind of got to wonder who gets up on this speech where everybody is going to be watching and you're recording, and it makes sense if you stumble a bit and you stutter. But how do you say, "And I told them," when you didn't?
See, I would cut him some slack on that, because he comes from a world in which his word is law. And it could be that I told my flunkies to call them, and in my mind, it got done. You know, I give the order, it's done. I don't think about it. And so he just assumed and used the imperial I. So, you know, he's got some adjusting to do to be in state government where he's actually not going to have that kind of response where he says jump and people say how high. It's a different ballgame.
It is, though. Charlie, you kind of make a good point there. I mean, one of the criticisms of Pat Quinn was his inability to delegate. Do you think that Rauner coming in from the corporate world will have a little bit more ability to kind of pick people that he thinks can handle things and let them run with it?
I would hope so. You never know. And I've said this before, I don't think governor is an entry-level position. Nonetheless, you know, Governor-elect Rauner is going to be the governor. And he put together kind of a diverse transition team, and there's some good people on there. And I think when all is said and done, if he wants to work with Madigan, Madigan will work with him, House Speaker Michael Madigan. People who look at Madigan as being the devil incarnate, including some editorial board folks, and that he's responsible for everything that's gone wrong in Illinois since Lincoln was assassinated, in fact, forget that, yeah, Madigan's been speaker a long time, but roughly two-thirds of the time Madigan was a speaker, we had a Republican governor. And Madigan worked well with those Republican governors. He worked well with Jim Thompson. He worked well with Jim Edgar, particularly in Edgar's second administration. He worked well with George Ryan. The governor he was most at odds with was Rod Blagojevich, a Democrat. So go figure.
Yeah, and he didn't get along great with Quinn. I think there was just a personality mismatch in terms of kind of Quinn's haphazard ways in his notes and Madigan's very strict, just, you know, patterns of everyday life. And I could see that pairing up well with Rauner. So in a lot of ways, yes, Charlie, I think they will work together. But also Madigan's always going to be looking out for his majority and not for Rauner and Rauner's.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Obviously.
But it was the same thing back in the day with Thompson and Edgar. The Republicans had the stuff they wanted. The Democrats had the stuff they wanted. And they kind of met to split the difference to move the state along.
And there is so much more we can talk about and will talk about in the coming weeks. One final note, passing this week, 63-year-old Lane Evans, who represented the 17th Congressional District, which was a Western Illinois district to begin with, based in the Quad Cities. And because of a remap in 1990, or rather in 2000, moved into central Illinois all the way to Decatur, became this big L shape across the state. And in the 90s, a redistricting from the Republicans included the city of Quincy. But Mr. Evans had been seriously ill with Parkinson's disease for some time, but he served, I believe, 24 years, elected as a very liberal Democrat in a blue-collar Quad Cities and then just an increasingly conservative district otherwise, and always fared pretty well in elections there, not because of his liberal stance. He was unapologetic for that, but kind of known for his constituent service and his service to veterans. But he passed away. His funeral is on Monday. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guests, WBEZ's Tony Arnold and Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues Magazine. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. If you're using a desktop or laptop, you can find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review, or on your phone, search it out at iTunes U. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer and Brian Mackey. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.